Okay, so let's try to continue a little bit from last time. So if you recall, the discussion is about tefillah.
Okay. Right?
Page, let's see here. Here, Mandalat. Okay. So basically the discussion about tefillah, and the discussion is the order of tefillah. Do you start with shavach, praise, and then request, and then bakasha, or the opposite? Right? Which order? So it's a machlokas. Right? It's a machlokas, tana'im. Which order you go? So the Rosh will explain a little bit the sense of each of the sides, and that's kind of where we were at. Right? We somewhat understood them, and we certainly didn't get to understand the machlokas between them. But one side, one argument was, is that you can't start with the requests. You can't start with bakasha, because you have to first set down the proper ideas upon which the bakasha is based. And the Rashba set down that there are three ideas which are primary. Whenever you make a request of somebody, there are three things that you have to have in mind. First thing is, are you asking for a repayment, like you deserve it, like to pay you back, or is it just pure chesed? You're asking for pure chesed. So he says, important. One thing that's important before you daven, before you request, you have to express that God is a gomel chesed in tofen. God, it's chesed. It's chesed Hashem, and we don't have any claim on God that God has to give us something. We're not requesting because He owes it to us. We're requesting because we know God's gomel chesed, and we're making a request. And that's the first thing you have to do. The second idea he says that's important to know is when you make a request is that is the one whom you're requesting from capable of giving you a request or not? And you have to know when you're asking God, what's your mindset? Are you asking like maybe he will, maybe he could, maybe he can't? So that's just saying is the bracha of Ata Gibor. God is a Gibor, he's powerful. Mechayim Esam, right, brings back the dead, expresses the idea that God's all powerful, omnipotent, right? And therefore, that's the platform upon which the request is based. It's not a maybe you could help me, I'm not sure if you could do something. I go to a doctor, can you please try to help me? Try, because you don't know, maybe you could, maybe you can't. God, you have to set down the proper attitude in tefillah. You're asking God, you know he could. Okay, and then he says the third thing is that a person has to know when you make a request, you have to know, is this your only option, so to speak? If this particular one person you're asking can't answer you, can't help you, could you go to someone else? Is there somewhere else to turn? So the saying is that by God, there's nowhere else to turn. Okay, God is kadosh. I think I said God is kadosh. He's distinct, separate from everything else. And even the kadosh and machalim yaluch selim. He's like the malachim. Praise God. I mean, everything in the creation is secondary to God. And he is the one who can answer your needs, and there's no one else. And if he doesn't, then it's not happening. If he doesn't want it to happen, it's not happening. If he does, it does. So it's not just that he's all-powerful, but that there's nowhere else to turn. So that changes the nature of your request. When you're requesting from someone where the first option, but you have plan B and plan C and plan D, then it's a different type of a request. So that's what the Rashba says, is that the position who holds that you have to begin with the shavach is saying is you don't want to come in requesting with wrong ideas. The request based on wrong ideas isn't the proper request. So that's why first you set down the proper ideas about God, about the nature of Him as a responder to your request, and then you can make the requests. Right? And that's learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, before he made, he wanted a request to come to Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of Parshas Chukat, and before he did that, he went through these things, right? He says that it's God started to give chesed, and it's all from God, and God doesn't have any claim on God, and God is Yadcha Chazaka, He's all powerful, and Asher Mikael Bashmayim Varetz Asher. There's no one else in the Shmayim Varetz who could really answer him. So that's what we learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the way to make a request. Okay, because the request is as good as your idea of whom you're requesting it, and the proper idea about the request. Okay, so for a second, okay. So that's one side. That was the side of Rabbi Yehoshua. I'm sorry, Rabbi Yeshua. Okay? First you give Shevach, then you make a request. And I think we kind of fleshed that out last time. We rushed through at the end last time was the other side.
Right,
the other side. What's the idea of first requesting and then giving Shevach? What's the point of that? Right? And on the contrary, it seems like it's difficult. How could you do that? You want to first say the right idea. Why are you saving the right ideas for the end? Right? Okay. So what he says, what the Rashba said, that, why don't we read it? Why don't we read this paragraph again? Because this is really where we ended off with him. It was very quick at the end, and I don't think we understood it for. So it's on top of Membav, on top of page Membav. Okay, so it says, Rabbi Eliezer Ra, Shiesh Inyan Acher Gadol Me'od B'Hakdamas HaShabach. That there's a Nehihal, that there's some other very important reason or issue with beginning with Shabbach. Okay, because he didn't begin with Shabbach. He began with the Bakasha, with the request. He says, because there's a big problem, big issue, starting with Shabbach. Lefishihu me'azos ha'eved, it's like a brazenness of the servant, l'hastir shivchei ha'adon, adon ha'kol be'aroi, to arrange the praises of the ultimate ruler, like in passing, or below kavana, without the kavana of an emichos ha'lev, and a lowliness of the heart, the yira, and a fear of a reses, and a trembling. And it would be inappropriate, it's brazenness, to organize the praise of the master, of the Adon HaKol, without having the right mindset, the right humility. Okay, I guess we'll see what happens. Therefore he held, Rabbi Yishuv Rabbi Lezer held, that you must first ask your needs. Okay, first ask your needs. And through that you'll know and feel your lowliness. And also means your lowliness. And the weakness of your strength. And you'll know and understand that you have no trick, no method of attaining any of your desires, kitzarchim zanosav, like your food, refuas kufo, and your health, you know, your healing, uli mali min ha'oyev, or to escape from an enemy, mishar pagayim, and from other mishaps, bilti im yazrenu hu yisparach, but through God helping you. That's the only way. And then, and after you proceed, you start with that, yimse levavo shavar. Then you'll find your heart broken. Venidka, and also another broken, yakir b'shefluso. And you'll recognize your lowliness. V'oz yeroi l'chavin m'shevach adon. Yisparach. And then you'll be fit to have kavana in the shevach of God. Asher hu mevakesh. The God who you're asking from, and then you'll be able to give your praise before him. Okay? And then he says, and I, the other position, Rabbi Shua brought a position from Moshe, and first you give Shavach, and then you give Bakasha. How are you, Rabbi Lezer, claiming that first you have to give Bakasha? Hey, Rabbi Lezer, you can't learn from Moshe, because Moshe was great. He was very strong. Because at all times he had the proper ideas. He was always fit and able to say praise of God. Okay, he was always in the proper mindset to say praise of God. Okay? So what's his idea here? Maybe we could expand on this. What's the problem? He's saying there's a problem with starting with praise. Right, there's a problem. And somehow the problem is remedied, rectified through starting with requests, with bakasha, and then you give praise. So what's the problem?
Well, Shabbat gives you confidence, and sort of like you think you're higher than you are.
Okay, good. Why?
Because you know you have a connection with God. You're talking to God. You know.
So you okay. Okay, but, I mean, talking to God is in requesting Bakasha, you're also talking to God.
Right, but in Bakasha, you're showing yourself that you're really lacking.
Mm-hmm, right. You mean in Shevach, you don't have that.
Right.
Right. I mean, in Shevach, you're just saying, God, you're great, or whatever, something to that effect, right? So, what's implied when a person's saying, you're great? To anyone, if you tell someone you're great, you know, or something to that effect, if you praise somebody, What's the, like, there's something, what's implicit in that?
Respect.
Respect? Okay, true, respect. But what else? What else is great? What else is implied in praising God? Something more subtle, which is a problem here with respect to God.
Greater.
Greater? What do you mean greater?
Like, that person's greater than you.
Okay, that's true, but that's not a problem, right? Because God is greater than you.
Awe.
Okay, good. But that's also good, right? It's also good. It's right to God. Well, what's a... Who could praise... who's really... Who could praise somebody? Like, could we praise, let's say, Einstein? Or could we... Well, who really could give an appropriate praise? Like, would we be able to just go and praise... You know, we could just... Like, let's say someone would go praise the Rav. You know? The Rav was a brilliant... genius, Talmud Chacham, something like that, right? What's, who do you imagine, like, a problem with someone doing that? Or like, let's say you hear some kid coming out, some fifth grader coming saying, "Oh, Rabbi Soloveitchik, he was such a smart man. He was brilliant. You know, he really knew how to learn. He was an expert." He doesn't know him. Okay, good. But let's say, what do you mean he doesn't know? What do you mean by that? Let's say he met him. He sits next to the shul. You know, he knows him.
He has a connection with him.
Okay. He has a connection with him. Let's say he does have a connection with him. But still, what would be wrong with him saying, you know, Rabbi Soloveitchik is such a smart guy. He's the greatest Talmud Chacham. He's the, you know.
Putting him above everybody else.
Putting who? Putting the other Soloveitchik above everyone else? Okay, but let's say he is. Let's say in reality he is above everyone else. Like when you talk about God, he is above everyone else, right? So there's no problem with that. Like, let's say you heard of this kid, fifth grader, doing that. What would you say to him? If you wanted to be, you know, if you didn't care about and make him feel bad. No. So I think the question is, who is he to judge that? I mean, what's a fifth grader know about the greatness of the Rav? You know? I mean, maybe he's just telling what saying what his father told him or something, but like, why? Because the Rav knows the first verses by heart? Or because the Rav knows the names of all the whatever, the Shvatim? Like, what does a fifth grader know about judging the Rav? You know, we're ranking the Rav. Right? He doesn't know anything. I mean, it's not... The idea of when you judge a person or you praise a person, it presumes a certain level of equality or, like, you're on a level playing field where you could grasp the person's greatness and you could express praise of it. So a lesser Talmud Chacham could praise the Rav for being a greater Talmud Chacham because he understands what it means to be a Talmud Chacham. He understands what learning is about. He understands how... He could see what it means, what the Rav's greatness is. A scientist could praise Einstein because he sees the greatness of Einstein. But a regular guy who just watches on TV and sees a special, you know, Channel 13 special about Einstein can't say, wow, he's a great genius. Why? Because he made up E equals MC squared. Like, what does that mean? Well, he doesn't have any sense of what it means. He could say the words, but if he would be saying, like, Albert Einstein is so smart, there's a certain arrogance in that, which is like that, is putting yourself in, like, a position to start judging him, and it's putting yourself in a position to start being the one to measure. Like, oh, Albert Einstein has your approval? Oh, that's nice to hear. You know, like, who are you? Well, you're not in the ballpark to make such a judgment. You know what I mean? So there's a certain, in praise of someone, and that's why, like, a servant doesn't go and praise his master. Master, you know, you're a great guy. I mean, who are you? You're a little servant. Yeah, servants don't get involved in that. I mean, you could... You know, there's a way to do that. He can't just talk, like, casually as if, you know, you should know you're a really great person. It's not, I mean, it's hard for us to relate to the mentality of a servant, but there's an idea of a certain humility, a certain smallness. You can't just, you're not his best friend, and you're not the judge of who he is. So when we talk to say praise of God, for us to say, God, you're great. In fact, there's a Gemara which says that, you know, we say, Akela Gadol Gibra, you know, so God is, whatever those words mean. Right, he's great, he's all powerful, whatever. So there's someone in the Gemara who says he kept going on. Ezos, this, that, a whole list of adjectives that describes God's greatness. You know, so Chazal, the rabbi said to him, he says, are you done? Have you finished the list of praise of God? Because you think like you're going better than what Chazal said. This is it. Now you've summarized, you said that's not enough. Now you're going to complete the list. You can't complete the list, whatever. So as they say, if not for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu said these four things, like Kelag Adal Gibra Vanoro, we wouldn't even be able to say them. Because we can't really even enunciate. We our idea of great, God is totally beyond that. So the idea of giving praise of God is really absurd. There's an absurdity involved in that. Because we can't measure. If we can't measure someone, a great Talmud Chacham or a great scientist, all the more so, of course. Right, it goes without saying that you can't measure God and say God is great. So there is a certain truth to it that from our perspective God is great. But our perspective is so small and so limited that any human being's perspective is so small and limited that to say it, there's a certain, it could affect you, and there's a certain, like an, that's a brazenness. That's what I think it says, it's like an azus. And there's an arrogance that comes along with even enunciating a praise. To put yourself in a position of praising God, there's something wrong with that. But at the same time, we have to. And the Torah tells us we should, and the Torah allows us to. But it has to be with a clear recognition of the fact that we can't really do this. It really doesn't make sense. But the other option, what would be the other option, is for us simply to not recognize God and to not express, to talk about great men and not talk about great God. So it would be like, then we wouldn't have a relationship with God. So the Torah does, and God set up, that we have a right to do it, but we have to at the same time do it in the context that we realize how small we are and how little of what we say is really worth. It's not really worth anything. Our praise is really not even scratching the surface about God, of God's greatness. But we don't have a choice, because that's the only way we could relate to God, and God allows us to do that. He allows us to express it as we see it. And if we realize that it's only as we see it, but it's very limited, you know? So there's a danger if you just get up there and just giving praise. Because that's the way when you talk. When a person talks naturally, they feel confident. They what they're saying, they kind of assume that what they're saying is actually makes sense, and they feel certain confidence in what they say. So you just get up there and start giving praise to God. It's as if you feel as if like this actually works. Oh, this makes sense. God, I'm just telling you. I just want you to know that, you know, as if you're actually capable of doing such a thing. So that's what he says, that you can't do that. You can't just get up and do that. What you have to do first is put yourself in your place. First, turn to God. Say, I am small, I am nothing. I have to ask you for all my needs. Because I can't, I'm a small, not, I'm weak. And I realize you're the creator, you're all powerful. I am small, and I am needy, and I make requests of God. That puts you in your place. That makes you feel your smallness and God's greatness. And in that context, when you praise God, you're praising Him from your low, small-mindedness, from your mindset that the lowly me is expressing the best that I could God's greatness. You know what I mean? But that must be done. Otherwise, you're gonna come at it from the wrong perspective. Your praise is gonna be with a distorted idea, as if you know what you're talking about. You know. And that's going to be off. There's a problem with that. You with me? So what about Moshe Rabbeinu? What's his point about Moshe Rabbeinu? But Moshe Rabbeinu did it. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu did give praise first. So what's the, how's the Rashba dealing with that? Right, because that was his proof. That was the other position's proof. The other position argued, Rabbi Yeshua said, no, first you give praise, then you have a request. And he said, I'll prove it to you. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He did that. So what's the Rashba's counter to that? Rashba, this position is going to have to deal with that, right? Why Moshe Rabbeinu did it? He did Shalach first, so why can't I do Shalach first? Why do I have to do Bakasha first? So what does he say? He says, because Moshe is Rav Gavrei. Moshe is great. He's a great person. And therefore what?
And therefore Moshe can understand all that God does.
Okay. So you're saying Moshe Rabbeinu could perceive God's greatness.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that true?
More than anybody else.
True. But could he, in truth, see God's greatness? It's very interesting, actually, because it brings to mind the idea, the question says, Moshe Rabbeinu was anav me'od mikol adam asher al pnei adama. He was the most humble. So you'd think, is he the greatest man? Would not be the humblest man. He's the greatest man, right? He's great. So he feels like he's small. He's humble. So how does that make it? Why is he the humblest guy? Is that just a coincidence, or is there a sense to that? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu the most humble of all people?
Because he lived in Israel out of his friend.
Okay, so therefore?
Nothing for all.
Okay, but why is that going to make him so humble? Is that like... Because it's true he did that, but is there... Like the Pasuk says... Is there a direct connection between Moshe Rabbeinu being the greatest Navi, the greatest person ever, and him being the ensemble person? Or is it like, if it's true you're saying that, then it's like a different thing, separate thing, because he took us out of Mitzrayim. You know, I'm claiming that there's an intrinsic relationship between the two. What is humility? Where does humility come from? What's the idea of humility? What's the sense of humility, being humble?
You don't view yourself as great.
Okay, don't view yourself as being great. So isn't it, it's an irony here that the greatest person doesn't view himself as being great, right? A small person views himself as being great, but the greatest person doesn't. So why should that be? Shouldn't it be the opposite? The greatest person views himself as great, the small person views himself as small. Why is it that it's the opposite? The greatest person views himself as small.
Because he realizes how much he doesn't know.
Right. Exactly. Is that a small person thinks he knows everything. Right? What is there not to know? I know everything. I'm the man. Right? Everyone, right? How much is there? What else is there? You know? And that's the way we feel, right? Kids think they know everything, right? High school, everyone feels they know everything, right? But then as you start wising up and you start seeing the world and you start realizing the depth and the breadth of knowledge, you see how little you know and how small you are. So Moshe Rabbeinu, because of his great knowledge, was able to see how small he really was. So we feel like we know more than Moshe Rabbeinu realized that he knew. Of course he knew more than us, but he had a glimpse of the greatness of the ultimate, and he knew how little his knowledge was, more than we do. And it's end up being in proportion. The greater you are, the more you see, more knowledge you have of God and of his ways, and the more you see how small we are, how small man is. So Moshe Rabbeinu knows more than us. But is he able to really praise God and to express the proper words, put into words the greatness of God? No, he can't either. Okay? But why could he give Shavach then without first doing Bakasha? Why could he give Shavach without first doing Bakasha?
Because he already saw himself as lowly.
Right, exactly. The idea is that we are corrupt. We think the world of ourselves. And if we just would just get up there and give praise, then we're not in the right mindset. Our default mindset is that I'm significant. And I have to first break that, lower myself, make requests, turn to God as in need, and then I could give Shavach, not in an arrogant state, but in a lowly state. Moshe Rabbeinu is always in that state. Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly in the world of God. And he's constantly saw the greatness of God. So when he gives praise, it's obvious to him that his praise is nothing. and it's just from his limited perspective. That's what it's saying. Moshe is Rav Gavrei. That's what the Rashba says. Gadol shebechol is hayideis of mechuvanos. At all times, his mindset was proper. We roi yumuchan lomar shvachav, and he was fit and able to express the praise of God. Okay, that was unique about Moshe Rabbeinu. That at any moment, in fact, that's one of the things, the uniquenesses of Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah, is that at any moment he could have nevuah. Any other Navi has to the whole preparatory process only at certain times, because the person goes up and down. His knowledge, he falls back into his normal world of his emotions, and then he goes back up to the world of knowledge, and it's not in a constant state of knowledge and a constant state of nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu, at any moment, he was able to have nevuah, because he was different. He was a different type of person. So that's saying you can't. That's what Rabbi Elazar is arguing. You can't learn from Moshe Rabbeinu that he gave shevach first, so we give shevach first. Not so simple. Moshe Rabbeinu was Rav Gavrei. He was able to do it because he doesn't need the prep. He doesn't need the prep, but we do need the prep, right? We need to put ourselves in the right mindset. Otherwise, we're going to have a corrupt shevach. So first, we have to give bakasha. Moshe Rabbeinu, different story, right? But let me ask you a question. So what is the idea of doing shevach first? So what's the other side? The other side is saying you have to give shevach first. It's kind of a catch-22, if you've noticed, is that you can't give shevach first because you have to first put yourself in the right mindset by giving by doing bakasha. You can't do bakasha first because you have to first express the proper ideas of shevach, so now your bakasha is on good footing, that you have the proper ideas in making your request, right? So it's kind of like you're stuck. It's a circle, right? You can never get started. Where are you going to start? And that's kind of the machlokas, is where do you start? Which is, you have to figure out how do you resolve this one, because they seem to be all true points. How do you get, how do you get around that? But before we get to that, so what is the position who says to do shevach first? So he says that first, how can you request? Can't make a request without first expressing the proper ideas upon which the request is founded, right? And that's what you learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. But does Moshe Rabbeinu need to do that? Like, what was we said? He said, you can't make a request. You have to first know God is chesed, gomel chesed. You don't want to have an idea that God owes it to you. You want to express the idea that God is all-powerful. You don't want to be in doubt whether God could do it. You want to express no one else could help you. God's the only one. Right? So that's why you can't start making requests until you say the proper ideas, right? But does Moshe Rabbeinu need to say those ideas? Well, why don't you say the same way Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have the problem of that he's too arrogant to give shevach, and he's allowed to give shevach first, say he could also do bakasha first, because he has all the right ideas. Right? So what's the... In other words, once you're saying Moshe is great and he's different, then none of this should apply to Moshe Rabbeinu. But it seems like the argument he's trying to learn, maybe Yeshua is trying to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, that you do Shevach first, because Shevach is you have to first proceed by your request with stating the proper ideas, so you make sure everything's under, is all straight. But Moshe, his whole thing is he's not going to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why could he learn from? Why is it appropriate to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? Why don't you say the same problem? Just like you can't learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, the other way. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have the problem of doing Shabbat first, he also shouldn't have the problem of doing Bakasha first. So it should be totally, Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't have nothing to do with it. You follow my question?
Yeah, but they're essentially saying the same thing underneath it all. And it's just that the way they apply that is different. Because they're both saying you need the right intentions.
Okay.
And what you do first is going to give you those right intentions, okay, the right mindset.
Okay.
Right? And just one says, the Shabbat uses the right mindset, one says the Bakasha uses the right mindset.
Right.
But it's the same mindset. And back to Moshe Rabbeinu had that mindset that you want to achieve.
Okay.
So you're really learning the mindset from Moshe Rabbeinu, so it does work.
Right, I understand. Give me one second. I have to formulate a question properly. There's a problem. Here's my question like this. Is that the position of all, do you have to do bakasha first, right? So why do you have to do bakasha first? Because you can't just give praise. You have to first put yourself in the right mindset in order to give praise. Right? You have to humble yourself before you give praise. So he says, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that. Right? That's the question. Moshe Rabbeinu gave praise for us. It says, no, because Moshe Rabbeinu was a great man. He was so great, he didn't need to do that. He was always in that mindset. He was always in that mindset. So therefore, he could just give praise. But we can't do that. Right? So what's his claim? So he's saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, even though we have to first make a request in order to humble ourselves, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to do that. He could just get up there and give praise. Right? Yeah, but so why did Moshe Rabbeinu give praise? So how's he going to explain that? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu give praise first? Right? It says he didn't need to make a request first. He was able to give praise first, right? So why did he give praise first? How are you explaining why he gave praise first? So presumably, right, because Moshe Rabbeinu really wanted to make a request. That was his purpose, is to request the contact of Israel. So why did he request first? Presumably because of those other ideas. Because when you request, that's the way a person, there's a sense that you should make a request. First you should express the proper ideas behind your request. And then make your request. And that's what we would do, but the problem is that we can't give praise. Right? We can't give praise first. We have to first start with the Bagasha. But I'm just saying is, but while, once you're saying is that Moshe Rabbeinu is different, so then what's the, then how could you learn, how do you explain that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't need any of these things? The whole discussion is irrelevant to Moshe Rabbeinu.
So I always thought that the praise is part of his request.
What? Okay, good. Good. Okay, good. Explain that. Explain what you mean by that.
Because it was determined that he wasn't going to say his job.
Okay.
Right?
Right. Beforehand, right.
Right. But now Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that because God is so great, God has the power to change that.
Right.
And therefore,
right,
he really can't. He's right, asking God to change.
Right. Right. I understand.
Because
God. Right. Right. Yeah. Maybe just to elaborate on what you're saying. I mean, I think I'm going to expand on it. That there's a difference between the way the praise introduces the request and the way the request introduces the praise. Okay? There's, even though we're saying is you can't give, first you have to give praise and then request, and the other guy's saying, no, first you have to request and then give praise, they're different. Okay, what's the difference? So let's start with the request first. Let's say you want to give praise. So what we're saying is you can't just give praise, right? You can't just give praise because it's going to be corrupt. You're going to be arrogant. So what do you have to do? First, you have to lower yourself, and then you can give praise, right? But is the request part of the praise? It's not part of it. It's just like a prerequisite. Right? It's not a sequence or anything. It's just that you have to put yourself in the right mindset. If you're in the right mindset, then there's no reason to do it because there's no segue between the request and the praise. The request is just to put yourself in the right mindset. But then the request, the praise stands on its own. The request is really the goal. You want to do an action, you can do a request. But you have to first put yourself in a good mindset. So all the request is merely lowering yourself. If you'd have some other way to lower yourself, that would also work. If you're Moshe Rabbeinu, that would also work. There's simply no sense to, if you don't need the prerequisite, if you already are low, there's no sense in starting with request and then praise. The praise is the praise. Praise is just give the praise. But the other way, when you're talking about you want to make a request, so there's an idea is that the way you make a request is that you first set down the proper ideas about the one whom you're requesting from. You give praise. You say the right ideas. You say all those ideas. God's great. God's all-powerful. God's a gomel chesed. And then in that context, you make the request. So it sets the stage. Now, does Moshe Rabbeinu need it? No, he doesn't need it. He's on it. He already has the right ideas. He's not going to have the wrong idea if he makes a request. But it's still the right way to make a request. The way you make a request is you express the ideas of upon which the request is based, and then you make the request. Like you go to a king, you say, "King, you're a great king, you're a kind king." In that context, please give me something. So even if you know the ideas, it's just the proper way to make the. There's a natural segue, all these ideas, God's great, he's all powerful, now God, can you please give me this thing? So by Moshe Rabbeinu, it's true he's not going to have the wrong idea, but it's not just a matter of having the right idea. It's true, it also corrects the idea. But there's a segue, and the way we do it, when we start with the praise, we start expressing true ideas and build the praise, the request based upon that. So that makes sense even for Moshe Rabbeinu. Even though he's not going to have wrong ideas, but it makes sense even for Moshe Rabbeinu. But in the other way, in the idea that if you really are trying to give praise and you just need the request as a prerequisite because you're going to be too arrogant, if you're not arrogant, then yeah, there's no reason to, then there's no sense in doing it. Why do you have to make the request in order to give the praise? Just give the praise. There's no natural segue between the two. It's just a matter of preparing yourself and lowering yourself so now you can give the praise, but you're ready, you can give the praise. So that's what it's saying, is that wouldn't make sense for Moshe Rabbeinu. So even according to the position who holds that we have to first give requests because we have to humble ourselves first and then we can give praise, that's not going to be for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the opposite. He's just going to give praise first. You know what I mean? The question then is I think what we have to do, and maybe we'll do this next time, but the question is what's the argument now? Well, that's one thing. What's the argument? Now, what's the argument between the two sides? I mean, because you're saying it's all about having the right mindset, right? You're saying it. But how do you decide? Like, in a certain sense, there's an unsolvable problem here. Because for us, normal people, not Moshe Rabbeinu, so we can't make a request because we have to first say the right ideas. We have to first set the stage by saying the right ideas. Right? That's one argument. But then we can't say the right ideas because the right ideas, who are we to say these right ideas about God? So we have to first request to humble ourselves in order so that our ideas will be in the proper mindset. So it's like we're kind of stuck. They're two good arguments, and if you really follow them both through, you're never going to be able to get started, you're never going to say anything. But that's clearly not the case, because there's clearly a mitzvah of tefillah, clearly an institution of tefillah. So now Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing on like how to resolve it. How do you move? So one argument is we just learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. We do what he did. Right? We do what he did. The other position says back, yeah, but how can you learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is great. Of course he could give praise first. But we can't. So I want to know if we can get more insight into what's that argument. I mean, what are they... Because that's what the Gemara concludes. That's what it's based upon. Can you learn from Moshe Rabbeinu or can you not learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? So maybe we could figure that out. And then another thing is you could ask another question, is that these are Tanaim who are arguing. Tanaim came after Shmoneh Esrei V'Sedah. Okay? Shmoneh Esrei V'Sedah, Anshei Knesset Gdolah, which was prior. Right? Mordechai, Daniel, these were Nevi'im. There's not some Nevi'im on there. So it was earlier than Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. What's that?
How can they argue?
Isn't it already a done deal? I mean, Anshei Gdolah set it up that you first do Shetel, then do Bakasha, right? So what are they discussing? How could Rabbi Eliezer say, no, you can't give Shetel first. You have to do Bakasha first. Really? I'll prove it to you. Look at Anshei Gdolah. You can't argue on Anshei Gdolah. So the Rashba knows this problem. So the Rashba says, no. And this is what we have to understand. I'll just tell you what he says. But he says that, now Anshei Gdolah was set up for the Tzibor. And this is the way, I guess I'm giving you the rough answer. I mean, there's a little more nuances here. But that was set up for the Tzibor, for Klal Yisrael, for the what the Tzibor at large does. When it's set up for Tzibor at large, just like Moshe Rabbeinu is great and he could do Shavach first and then Bakasha, the Tzibor also can do that. Okay? What their argument is about is if an individual on their own has a personal problem, personal sick, ill, a sick person in their house, and they want to do... They want to make a request. What's their order? Not doing Shmoneh Esrei. Forget Shmoneh Esrei. Says, and these positions held that you can't put in Shmoneh Esrei in Rafaino your own thing. We hold you could. They held you can't. So they held that's for the Tzibor. That's what everyone does. If you have your own personal thing, you got to make up to do your own thing. In that own personal thing, what's the order? Shabbat or Bakasha. But no one's arguing what the Tzibor does, because the Tzibor, he says, is like Moshe Rabbeinu, just like Moshe Rabbeinu is great, he could do Shavuot first, so too the Tzibor is great. The codified material of the Tzibor also could be Shavuot first. The Machlokas is in a limited case of an individual. So what I'd like to understand is, why is the Tzibor like Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu. He's great. He's always in the right mindset. But the Tzibor, just because, I mean, the Tzibor is the Tzibor. Not everyone in the Tzibor is so great, and it's such a right mindset. I mean, he like equates it somehow to Moshe Rabbeinu, but it seems to be too much. I mean, how's the Tzibor, just because we're doing a codified thing and everyone in the Tzibor is doing it, doesn't mean that we're like Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, why don't we still have the problem that if we give praise, we're going to be feeling arrogant? So who cares that it's the Tzibor? So I don't really understand that point. I mean, you could look at it, but that's essentially... So two things I think hopefully we could try to work out next time. One is, what's the argument of which one which one takes precedence? And then how does it apply that the Tzibor doesn't have this whole machlokas? The Tzibor could definitely do like Moshe Rabbeinu, but individual is where the whole machlokas applies. Okay? Question? One more question, and this is something that you can think about. Okay, I mean, this is a little hard, these questions are hard, but here's a question which would be good for you to think about when you die. Is that the Rosh was saying is that the first bracha, we're expressing the idea that God is chesed, gomel chesed. That the tefillah is not based upon our merits, but it's because God is gomel chesed, right? That's an important idea. Tefillah, we don't deserve it, it's God's chesed, right? And that's what we say in the bracha. You know, we first talk about Hashem, you know, saying, okay, you know, God is gadol, gadol, gibor, and oh, he's great, now gomel chesed tovim. He grants, right? Chesed tovim. But then we say, v'konei akal, he's created everything, v'zocher chasdei avos, right? He remembers the chesed of the avos. Maybe gol of nevenehem, right? He brings a good, you know, gula to their children. Why are we talking about mentioning the chesed of the avos? It seems to be slipping into the other idea, doesn't it? Because chesed of the avos is saying, the avos are great, they did a lot of chesed, and therefore God remembers it and repays us. You know, why is that? First of all, why isn't that kind of saying, repay us for the chesed of the avos, which is saying like we deserve it? And even if it's not somehow that problem, how does that fit into the theme of the bracha? You know what I mean? Like, it's like the Rosh was picking out one line, gomel chesed tovim, but there's another, look at the other part. Zocher chasdei avos means he remembers the greatness of the avos. It kind of sounds like we're making a claim of deserving it or something. So what's the, and also what's the idea of the chasdei avos? You notice there's like gomel chesed tovim, God does chesed, and then he remembers the chesed of the avos. Like, what's, is that just coincidental that the word chesed is appearing? And what's the chesed of the avos even mean? Like, what's the flow of the bracha, basically? That's my question, you know? So that's, you know, maybe we could pay a little attention to that bracha and try to see if we can kind of just round out what's the flow. Okay, what's the theme and how does it fit into the Rashba's point? Okay? Some food for thought.